Okay. The chair calls the third meeting of the ALA Council to order. Would all councilors please occupy the reserved seats at the front of the room? President O'Leary is appearing on the Today Show this morning in New York City and will not be joining us today. ALA immediate past president Jim Rettig will assist me on the platform this morning as needed. And I do want to let you know that she'll be on the Today Show and she'll be announcing the winners of the Newbery and Caldecott medals. And just in case you haven't heard, it's Rebecca Steed, author of When You Reach Me and Jerry Pinkney, illustrator of The Lion, the Mouse, who are the 2010 winners of the John Newbery and the Randolph Caldecott medals, the most prestigious awards in children's literature. All right, with that good news behind us, we're gonna move on. Also on the platform, we have Ellie Mina, ALA parliamentarian. Joanne Kemp, director of the Office of ALA Governance. And Keith Michael Fields, ALA executive director and the secretary of the council. Jim Rettig, as I mentioned, is assisting me and past president of ALA. Hooray, Jim. At this meeting, we will again follow the same rules that were approved during the ALA Council 1 meeting. As a courtesy to others, please turn your cell phones off or to silent prompting. If you need to make or take a call, please leave the council area and thank you. Also, please watch the overhead screen for the motion description to use on your voting card. You may only use that descriptor. Your voting record is at your place. You should have a blue card for this morning's meeting. If you must leave before adjournment, please take your card to Lois Ann Gregory Wood. A quorum for a council meeting is 75 councilors. We have well over 75 councilors present, and therefore we have a quorum. The chair would like to ask that persons submitting reports be as brief as possible, since today's agenda is very full. Written reports should not be read, and when resolutions are presented, only the resolve clauses should be read. The agenda is Council Document 8.3. It's revised and final, and all other documents issued since the last council meeting are available at the pickup station in this room. Again, I would suggest that those of you who are on the agenda to report come up on stage and sit beside Keith Fields shortly before your presentation. This will enable us to move through the agenda more effectively, and thank you. We have received the following resolutions to add under new business. ALA Council Document Number 37, Resolution Concerning the Dratted ALA Event Planner, and ALA Council Document Number 38, Resolution in Support of 2010 Spectrum Presidential Initiative. Do you have any other new business to add? All right. Are there any objections to the agenda as amended? It's not amended, but just to the agenda, okay. And hearing no objections, the chair declares the agenda adopted. Council Policy 5.3.6 provides that memorials, tributes, and testimonials will be presented at the beginning of the last session of the ALA Council at each midwinter meeting and annual conference. First, I will read the names of persons recognized by memorial resolutions. Their names will be displayed on the screen. Let us stand as I read the names of those being remembered today. They are John Clifford Mortimer, Mary Alice Hunt, J. Michael Rothaker, Ken Davenport, Sally Farrell, Eliza Atkins Gleason, Effie Lee Morris, James or Jim Rondo, Judith Sarabek, and John Charles Fox. Moment of silence. Please be seated. We'd also like us to remember the people who have been hurt and killed in Haiti, The numbers, as you know from the news, are between 100 and 200,000. And I would like to also report that 27,000 in our donations and the meeting of our donations by the Convention Center have been collected. We have two tributes honoring Jean Sugg and Sonia Sotomayor. Copies of the memorials, tributes, and testimonials are available at the council pickup station. I now call your attention to ALA Council Document 11.2 and ask John DeSantis, Chair of the Council Tellers Committee, to present the ALA Executive Board election results.
Thank you, Roberta. Good morning, everyone. The Tellers Committee met yesterday at 7:30 p.m. I would like to thank the other members of the committee for their work last night. 137 ballots were requested. 134 ballots were returned. 0 ballots were void. The following two candidates were elected to 3-year terms on the ALA Executive Board: J. Linda Williams, Kevin Reynolds. Their terms will begin at the close of the 2010 annual conference in Washington, D.C., and extend through the end of the 2013 ALA annual conference in Chicago. Thank you, and congratulations to the winners.
Thank you, John. And now, will the newly elected ALA Executive Board members please stand so that we can appropriately congratulate them? Congratulations. I now refer you to ALA Council Document Number 25 and call upon Councilor Thomas L. Wilding, Chair of the Constitution and Bylaws Committee, to present his report. Tom?
Thank you. Good morning. I will bring you good news. We do not have any constitutional or bylaw amendments this year. We do have one action item. We had referred to us an application for affiliate membership by the Association of Jewish Libraries, Incorporated. We reviewed the documents, and in the large, we had no problem with it. But our policy 9.2 requires that the council consider the following criteria. And I have them listed on the report. I won't read them all. But I'll draw your attention to the last one particularly that says, do not discriminate in membership on the basis of race, creed, color, sex, sexual orientation, age, disabilities, or national origin. Now yesterday, after I had already done this report, we added two more things to that list as part of the Policy Monitoring Committee's report. Gender identity or expression, actually I think it's one thing when you put the or in. The Association of Jewish Libraries, in their bylaws, says open to any member who has an interest in Judaica librarianship and so forth. But they also, in an accompanying document, gave us their non-discrimination policy. And their non-discrimination policy reads as it is in the report and does not include sexual orientation and does not include now gender identity or expression, which is also now in our policy. So in the absence of that sort of explicit inclusion, we were uncomfortable bringing a recommendation to approve outright. We also didn't, we were at a loss because there were a lot of different things we could do. We had three different options. One was to just bring a recommendation not to approve it. One was to bring it with a recommendation that we approve it contingent upon the receipt of such affirmation that these things are included in their non-discrimination policy, and that we as council sort of approve it that way and give it to the board to get that affirmation, and then it would go into effect. And the third option was to just defer action on it until council has received that affirmation. We opted to recommend the second course as sort of the more efficient one, which is to say, hey, you guys, you need to do this, and then tell the board that once they've done that, the affiliation can happen. So our recommendation, our motion on the back of that sheet is that the council approves affiliate status for the Association of Jewish Libraries Incorporated, contingent upon the receipt by the executive board of an affirmation by the Association of Jewish Libraries Incorporated that sexual orientation is explicitly included in its non-discrimination policy. And now, if I may edit that to include also gender identity and gender expression, since I don't want to have to come back and do this again.
Okay. Is there any discussion on making that change to the motion that you received? Then we will go ahead with it. Oh, I'm sorry, microphone number three.
Bernie Margolis, Councillor at Large. No objection to making that change, but I would like to discuss the motion when that's appropriate.
Okay. All right. Is it appropriate now, Tom, for us to discuss the motion? All right.
Bernie Margolis, Councillor at Large. I support the motion, but I'm concerned, particularly since this is an issue around non-discrimination, whether we are holding the existing affiliates, those other organizations that we're connected with the exact same standard. And in fact, if we made a change yesterday to our policies, are we going back, and who will be doing that, to all of the other affiliate organizations to guarantee that as our views of the world change, that those organizations that we would like to have affiliated with us also carry those same perspectives of the world. If, in fact, other affiliates are not being held to the same standard, then I think this motion should move without the caveat, without the contingency that's included in it. Thank you.
Can I respond to that?
Yes.
Okay, number two on our report, which is a non-vote item, brings up that exact point, that, in fact, any organization we affiliate with can change their bylaws a year later and be out of sync with us, or we can change ours and they become out of sync with us. And so we're raising the issue that there is this question about how affiliates are monitored over a period of time, because our policy is clear. It says that at the time of affiliation, they have to be this. And if they're not, we feel we have to bring a recommendation not to affiliate with them. But we have this issue. And we did not discuss it. I'm not real sure whose issue that is, whether that's a constitution and bylaws issue. I suspect it might be, since it's our responsibility to do this this process, that it would also be our responsibility to do that process. But we don't have a process for that, and we thought that was a problem.
Okay, microphone number seven.
Larry Roman's executive board. You just said if they didn't fulfill our non-discrimination clause that you'd have to bring it forward with a recommendation not to approve, but in fact you didn't do that.
Correct.
And I think that in any of these categories, whether it's race or sex or anything, that if it weren't in there, we wouldn't want to approve it. And I don't think we should contingently approve something. They should have to fulfill our non-discrimination clause before we vote on it.
Any further discussion? I would assume we're prepared to move forward with a vote on the resolve clause that appears on the screen. And so I'm asking, will all those who support this motion please raise one of your hands? All of those opposed, please raise one of your hands. The motion passes.
Thank you, Tom.
Good enough.
Okay. I now direct your attention to ALA Council document number 19 and 19.1 and call upon documents 19 and 19.1 and call upon Martin L. Garner, Chair of the Intellectual Freedom Committee, to report. Martin.
Thank you, Roberta. Thank you. Good morning. This is my first time, so please forgive if I am a little nervous. You're all so scary. I'm pleased to present the report of the Intellectual Freedom Committee to Council. The report is attached. I know you can read. I would just like to point out a few items of interest. I would like to add our committee's welcome to Barbara Jones as Director of the Office for Intellectual Freedom. I know she was introduced as part of the FTRF report, but we are also very pleased to have her on board assisting us in our work. We kicked off our new initiative, Choose Privacy Week, with a wonderful author event and some fresh baked cookies, if you were there. We also had unveiled our new privacy resource guide. All the campaign materials are available at the ALA store. We began our project with our emerging leaders. We were pleased to have been selected to have them help us update our libraries in the Internet Toolkit, which is from the year 2000. A few things have changed since then. That will be ready by the June conference, which is also when we hope to have the 8th edition of the Intellectual Freedom Manual available, providing that the publication schedule stays on track. Of an item of business at this conference, we did spend a lot of time talking about the traditional cultural expressions document, and as it does show in the report, the IFSC did vote to endorse the document, though it was not a unanimous vote. And we spent a lot of time struggling with this issue, as we know that the association has been. Ultimately, we felt that it was important to stay engaged in the issue to continue to speak to our areas of access in this matter. Finally, I just want to point out planning efforts for the Leroy C. Merritt Humanitarian Fund's 40th anniversary. We will be having a gala celebration in Washington, D.C., Monday, June 28th, at the Folger Shakespeare Library. Tickets are available. As you know, I spammed you with a request to purchase tickets earlier in the weekend. And this does bring us to the one item of action that we have to bring forward, a resolution in honor of the Merritt Fund. And if I may, we'll read the one resolve clause. Resolved that the American Library Association congratulates the Leroy C. Merritt Humanitarian Fund on its 40th anniversary, commends the Merritt Fund for its continued dedication to supporting librarians who are experiencing discrimination or fighting for the cause of intellectual freedom, and urges its members to financially support the Merritt Fund.
Okay. Is there any discussion of the motion? Microphone number 4.
John Moorman, Intellectual Freedom Roundtable Counselor. The Intellectual Freedom Roundtable endorses this resolution.
Microphone number 7.
Nick Buron, YALSA counselor. The YALSA board approves this in spirit. We do have a motion to amend the end of the resolution clause.
Okay. Are we prepared with the amendment?
The motion's been submitted and it's been seconded by Councilor Tobin.
Okay. Would you read your amendment?
You want me to read the whole new resolve clause?
Or just the amendment. End? Just the amendment.
The motion would be that at the end of the sentence that urges its members to financially support the Merritt Fund, we would like to add at a level that is comfortable and meaningful to each of them.
Okay. Is there discussion of the amendment to the motion? If there is no further discussion, we will take a vote on the, there is discussion. Okay, microphone number 7.
Larry Romans. I think it's implicit in any of the resolutions that we bring that we financially support things at a level that is comfortable and meaningful to each other. A resolution like this doesn't say that you should go broke in supporting this, and I think to include this just for the Merritt Fund sort of draws away from the attention that it's the 40th anniversary, that they've done good work, and we hope that our members will continue to support it. I think this is a very bad amendment and doesn't honor the fund.
Is there any further discussion on the amendment? Microphone number 4.
Cam, Councillor at Large. I should point out to counselors, if they're not aware of it, that contributions to the Merit Fund are not tax deductible. So I believe that this comfortable and meaningful phrase should go in there for that reason.
Okay. I think that wouldn't we have Lingwei Zhang next, since he's already spoken to the amendment? Okay. So microphone number 7. He didn't speak to the amendment.
I'd like
okay,
to speak
then you
to
can
the
go
motion.
Next. Okay, certainly.
Nick Buron, Yalsa Councillor. We have felt at this, you know, very recently, as you know, many of our members are in financial straps, yet they still want to continue to donate. We also feel that at the same time, the divisions have been restricted in the way that they can utilize their own money. And so we ourselves have actually, and the YALSA board, have imposed this on ourselves. When we're asking people to join Friends of YALSA, we are including this ourselves and have voted on this language so that we could feel that no contribution is too small.
Okay, is there any further discussion? No, microphone number 7.
Lingwei Zhang, Councilor at Large. A resolution to me is a strong statement of the group that we declare to the public. And I think I would caution ourselves that when we pass a resolution that basically says do whatever that is comfortable to you and meaningful to you, that doesn't seem to speak well to the resolution. And I would strongly encourage that we do not have that statement at the end. Thank you.
Okay. If there's no further discussion, we will proceed to a vote on the amendment. All of those in favor of the amendment, please raise one of your hands. All of those opposed, please raise one of your hands. The amendment does not pass. We will proceed back to the motion. Are we prepared? Mark your ballots, CD number 19.1, amend. And I'm certain that you all marked your ballots for the motion that we previously passed, correct? That I failed to announce to you. You did not. Okay, then I want to also be sure that on the previous vote that we took, which was for, let's see, the Jewish Libraries, it was Council Document CD number 25, that you mark your ballots yes or no for that one as well. CD number 25. As amended, yes. Thank you for keeping me honest. Okay, so if you've marked your ballot for CD number 19.1 amend, then we're going to proceed forward back to the main motion. Microphone number 2.
John Sandstrom, GLBTRT counselor, and our roundtable does endorse this resolved also.
Microphone number 7.
Sarah Pritchard, Library Research Roundtable counselor, and former trustee of the Leroy Merritt Humanitarian Fund. I heartily support this motion and encourage everybody to contribute as little or as much as they can. One of the things you see when you are trustee that we cannot really share is the actual letters, the pleas that are written to the fund. The reason it's not tax deductible is because all of your money goes to support specific individual people, and it would make you cry to see what people write about the situations they are facing. It's an honor to our profession that we've had this fund for 40 years. I look forward to the event. I didn't get your spam, so send it again. Thank you.
Okay. If there's no further discussion, we'll proceed to a vote on the motion. Please raise one of your hands if you are approving the motion. Okay. Please raise one of your hands if you do not approve the motion. Okay, the motion passes. Mark your ballot, CD number 19.1. Thank you, Martin.
Thank you.
I now direct your attention to ALA Council Document number 20 through Council Document 20.4 and call on Councilor Mario Asensio, Chair of the Committee on Legislation, to report.
Good morning. This is also my first time up here and my first time on council, so I am excited and a little nervous. Mm-hmm. I would like to first of all thank the Committee on Legislation and the ALA Washington office staff for their diligent work. I also know that my colleague Vivian Pisano would like to thank the Office of Information Technology Policy, the Office of Information Technology Policy, OITP, Advisory Committee. I bring this report with three action items to Council for your consideration. Also included in this report is additional information about the activities of COL, its subcommittees, Legislation Assembly, and the OITP Advisory Committee. The ALA Washington Office 6-month report was emailed to Council prior to midwinter. In this report, you will find additional information about recent activities of COL as well as the ALA Office of Government Relations. COL has two important items to bring to your attention. The first is regarding National Library Legislative Day, which brings library advocates like yourselves to DC. For those of you who have attended National Library Legislative Day, you know it's a wonderful and empowering experience. This year we will not have the traditional National Library Legislative Day. In its place, ALA is coordinating a Library Advocacy Day, a rally for libraries. The rally will take place during 2010 ALA Annual in Washington, D.C. on Tuesday, June 29th. Library advocates like yourselves from all 50 states and Washington, D.C. will meet at 11 a.m. on the U.S. Capitol grounds. The rally will feature guest speakers, photo ops, and a chance to stand up for our libraries. After the rally, participants will meet with their members of Congress and their staff members. This is a family-friendly event, and I personally encourage you to bring your spouses, partners, children, and other family members to speak about the impact that libraries have on our lives. For more information about volunteering opportunities, please visit www.ala.org/NLLD. There is also a flyer, if I brought it, in the back. The second item is regarding the Legislation Assembly, which serves as a major point of communication between ALA units and COL to exchange information on legislative and policy issues. The Legislation Assembly is also the main opportunity for units to communicate legislative concerns to other units. Therefore, we ask all division and roundtable counselors to make sure that your respective units have designated a representative to Legislative Assembly. We also encourage state or regional chapters to participate in Legislation Assembly. Last, we ask you to encourage chapters to So while we've been at conference, the Department of Agriculture and Commerce announced the second and last round of funding opportunities for broadband. There is potentially $4 billion available, and libraries were mentioned as a high priority for both agencies. The ALA Washington office will once again offer assistance so that libraries can maximize their participation. This Friday, June 22nd at 1:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, ALA will be hosting its first webinar, and it's going to be a broad overview describing this wonderful funding opportunity, or amazing funding opportunity. For more information, go to the ALA No Connections Lessons from Five Shared... I'm sorry. Go to ALA Know Your Stimulus website, OITP has published Making Connections, Lessons from Five Shared Library Networks, a free publication that is also available on the website. Now, I initially had four action items for Council's consideration, but we're gonna pull one, and I'll mention that in 1 second. But I want to direct your attention to Council Document 20.1, which I would like to move to adopt, Resolution on Transparency and Openness in the Federal Government. And I can read the resolved. Resolve that the American Library Association commend the President of the United States and the Office of Management and Budget for improving the federal government's policies and capabilities for making government information available to the American public in an open, timely, and participatory and transparent manner. calls on the Obama administration to support federal agencies providing services already in place that assist the public in their access and use of government information, including federal agency libraries, the government printing office, the National Technical Information Service, and the General Services Administration's Office of Citizens. Sent copies of this resolution to President Barack Obama, Peter Orszag, Peter Orszag, the Director of the Office of Management and Budget, and other interested parties.
Would you like to speak further on the resolution?
No.
Or should we proceed to the vote?
Proceed to the vote.
Okay. Is there any discussion on the motion? Microphone number 7.
Larry Romans, this doesn't conform to the resolution form that we all agreed to. It should be commends in the first resolution, and the third resolve shouldn't be there at all. It should be on the resolutions form. We no longer include the list of people to whom it goes as part of the resolution. Other than that, I fully support the resolution.
I think we might need to amend the amendment. Okay, all right. Is there any further discussion? Microphone number 7.
I assume that before this gets sent out, that those changes will be made.
The executive director has the authority to make those changes. Is this okay to clean up the resolution? Is that okay with you, Mario?
Yes. Thank you.
All right. Microphone number 2.
Aaron Dobbs, Councilor Large. I was just going to say that's a cosmetic change. So.
Okay. Microphone number 7.
Mary Mallory, Godart Councilor. Godart supports this resolution. Thank you.
Microphone number 7.
Janet Swanhill, Councilor at Large. As the one woman person in favor of preservation of the hortatory subjunctive, I have always objected to this particular instruction. It should be commend, call, and send. If, however, we are going to go against the hortatory subjunctive, it should at least be commends, calls, and sends, and not commend in one and calls. So make, please, whichever direction you go, just make it consistent. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right, we will proceed with the vote on the resolution with the S added to commend and number 3 removed. And I'd like now to ask you to raise one of your hands if you approve the resolution. Okay. Please raise one of your hands if you do not approve it. All right, the motion passes. Mark your ballot, CD number 20.1. Mario, we're ready for the next one.
I move to adopt Council Document number 20.2, Resolution to Support Digital Information Initiatives at the U.S. Government Printing Office. Resolved that the American Library Association, ALA, work to ensure that the government fulfills and its obligations to create, authenticate, collect, disseminate, and preserve government information. Thank GPO for the work that has been done in FDCIS development and urges that GPO demonstrate its capacity to ingest both access and preservation copies of digitally born and digitized historic collections of FDCIS. Urges GPO to establish partnerships to conduct demonstration projects for systematic gathering and accessing digitally born content. Urges GPO to establish partnerships to conduct demonstration projects for creating and accessing digitized historic collections. Urges Congress to reaffirm no fee public access to dissemination of and preservation of authentic government information by providing sufficient and sustained funding to the GPO to support cataloging and indexing and the Federal Depository Library Program for systematic gathering of digitally born and digitized historic collections. Urges Congress to provide sufficient and sustained funding to the GPO to support FDCIS.
Okay. I assume we're going to make the addition of the S's. Yeah. And given that, I'd like to ask if there's any discussion. Microphone number 7.
Janet Swan Hill, Councillor at Large. I'd like to hear, I find the first resolved curious, and I would like to hear some suggestion for how it is ALA might work to ensure these things that go beyond the steps that are outlined in the other resolveds.
Microphone, are you planning to speak to the resolution? Microphone number 7.
Mary Mallory, Godart Councillor. Godart supports this resolution. Thank you.
Any further discussion? Everyone who approves the resolution, please raise one of your hands. Anyone opposed, please raise one of your hands. All right, the motion passes, and mark your ballot CD number 20.2. Mario.
Thank you. I mentioned that I initially had 4 items. After last night's council forum and listening to the comments of council members, we have decided to pull this next item, council document 20.3.
Okay. So you're withdrawing that resolution. Do we need to take a vote? We don't need that. Okay. All right. Then we're going to proceed to the next. Okay. We're going to proceed to the next resolution. Like we had. Okay. We're going to proceed to the next resolution.
Okay. Thank you. I move to adopt Council Document 20.4, Resolution on Universal Access to Broadband.
Please read the resolution.
Thank you. Oh, the resolution.
Read the resolve clauses.
Oh, yes, thank you. Okay. Resolve that the American Library Association urges federal, state, and local governments to recognize that universal access to broadband is essential to support the basic right of unfettered access to information in order for the public to participate in the digital world and the global information economy. And be it further resolved that federal, state, and local governments, as well as the public, support libraries as essential providers of broadband access for communities across America.
Would you like to discuss that any further? No. Okay. In that case, is there any discussion? Microphone number 7.
Deirdre Conkling, Councillor at Large. I just wanted to say our watered down version. We actually really wanted to say this is a human right. So just thought I'd throw that in.
Okay. Any further discussion? Seeing no further discussion, we'll proceed to a vote. All those in favor of this resolution, please raise one of your hands. All of those opposed, please raise one of your hands. The motion passes. Please mark your ballot CD number 20.4. And thank you, Mario. Thank you. Okay. We're ready now for Beverly Lynch. I'm sorry, microphone number 7.
Larry Romans. I'm curious how the traditional cultural expressions got referred to the Committee on Legislation in the first place, since it doesn't have anything to do with legislation. And secondly, I'm curious how it got withdrawn, since the committee didn't meet after the.
Okay. If I can have your indulgence, we can ask Mario to respond to those questions. Is that appropriate, Ellie?
Is it appropriate to ask Mario to respond to those questions?
Mario, would you be willing to step to a microphone and respond?
To answer Larry's question. Sorry? No. Well, that was me.
Microphone number 7.
My committee gave me authority to make that decision.
Okay. Do you want to speak to, sorry.
Is anyone here from OITP? Right, because I can answer that, but you can probably do an even better job.
Okay, we have someone stepping up to the microphone. Microphone number 8. Please identify yourself.
Lynn Bradley, Office of Government Relations, Washington office. This came through the Committee on Legislation because that is the primary mechanism via which the Washington office makes reports, and the OITP report is, for example, attached to your written report at this council, as it has been for a number of years. And therefore, this is the mechanism we have used a number of times on OITP-generated work to reflect how resolutions and other policy statements come out. I don't know how much more history you want.
If I might just add that the whole issue has originated out of, I believe, UNESCO. So these are part of various global information policy developments, and I think that's how it actually came in.
Great. It came out of international copyright discussions and was one of many different potential subsets of that agenda. There are various times we were asked through the World International, the WIPO, I just forgot what it stands for, intellectual property, these kinds of issues come up. There was a group that's been working for several years with staff from the Washington office and especially OITP, and a number of members and all units invited to participate.
Okay. The Committee on Legislation's report has ended, and I'm not sure if what we... Microphone number 4.
Elizabeth Riddler, sorry, Councillor at Large. I would request that the Keith Michael Fields arranged that a copy of the principles of the librarianship and traditional cultural expressions be sent out to all members of council, because many of us do not remember seeing it. So just so everybody is on the same page with the same document, and so I would assume this is going to come up at annual, and then we would have had a chance to look at the document.
We actually just had that very discussion this morning, and we thought that, in fact, it had been sent out. We will resend it or send it for the first time, depending on which.
Okay. I'm going to draw this to a close soon. Are we still speaking to this particular topic? Is that what is planned at microphone number 7?
Mary Mallory, Godart Councillor. I had actually had a question about the COL report, so is this not the time to ask it?
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Well, we had completed the report, but please ask your question.
Yeah. Oh, thank you very much. At Chicago Annual, Godart and the Committee on Legislation organized a retreat on government information and the Federal Depository Library Program. And many ALA units sent representatives and liaisons to this retreat. It was a half-day program. And so there is a report, I believe, that's been done about the retreat. And my understanding is that COL has the report, and so I just wondered what the status of it was and when it would be disseminated to council. Thank you very much.
Okay, we have Lynn Bradley here from that particular office. I just asked Lynn if she could respond to that question. Microphone number 8.
Lynn Bradley, Office of Government Relations. We are very, as you all know, membership driven, and it was not our sense as staff that people came to us, and even in that discussion, there was not necessarily a commitment to have the second one. I'm sure that the committees and Godart would be very glad to rediscuss that and see how we go further. I know that some of them are planning a variety of programs and discussions at the annual conference, especially because we'll be in DC, where GPO and other stakeholders would be more easily represented.
Okay, microphone number 4.
Lock Morsi, ACRL counselor. I do want to apologize for not being at the council forum last night. I want to clarify regarding the withdrawal of Resolution 20.3. The ACRL board had directed me, if this came to council, to vote in favor of this. There was some information, I think, that might have been misleading at the council last night. RBMS, one of our sections, was informed of this. They changed their mind at the last minute and decided to have some questions and oppose it, but I wanted to make sure people understood that there was a full discussion among all of our sections within ACRL. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Microphone number 7.
Janet.
I'm sorry, number two. Microphone number two. Thank you.
James Casey, Counselor at Large. I've got one quick question. There's supposed to be a rally on the 29th of June on Capitol Hill. That would conflict with Council 3, which is on Tuesday the 29th, and I think it's 11 a.m. Mm-hmm. Are there plans to afford counselors the opportunity to participate in this rally?
Yes. I'm going to ask Keith Michael Fields to talk about that.
That issue has come up a couple of times over the last couple of weeks. I'm going to just wing it on this one, but one option might be to start the council meeting earlier. With council's permission, what we will do is perhaps send out some options to councilors and determine the interest in attending the rally, which I'm assuming will be overwhelming, and possibly then we would have the option of adjusting the schedule.
Okay, thank you very much. Microphone number seven.
Janet Swan Hill, Counselor at Large. This is an observation on process, but I've seen in the course of now 22 years on council, sometimes when we deal with committee reports, it comes up with an action item or a motion or whatever, and after those motions are done, the question is, do you have any? There's discussion on the action items finishes. And that is considered to be the end of the report, when in fact there are people who have questions about the report, and the way that your script is written makes it seem as if further discussion is inappropriate. We were clearly not through with the Committee on Legislation report, and yet they did their four action items, and it was considered done. So I don't know what to do about the script, but it might be useful to remember that there are things to discuss in committee reports other than comments on specific action items.
Understood. Thank you very much. Okay, are we now prepared? I'm sorry, microphone number three.
Bernie Margolis, Councilor Large. I want to urge the Executive Director to just go ahead and change the schedule for the 29th. Please don't engage us in an online discussion of options. I think we all should be at the rally. We all should be there fighting for more voice for libraries with our Congress. We all need to be there. We all should be there. Please just make that happen for us. Thanks.
I must point out that that is not within the purview of the Executive Director, but we will go through appropriate channels and proceed in that direction based on what appears to be general agreement.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, are we now ready for microphone number four?
Tony Negro, Counselor at Large. I would just like to comment that June 29 is the 4th of July, prior to the 4th of July weekend. Have you received commitments from Congress people and their staff to be available during that day?
It is our understanding they will be in session.
Thank you.
Okay, we will now proceed. I now direct your attention to ALA Council Document Number 18 and ALA Council Document 18.1 and call upon Beverly Lynch, Chair of the International Relations Committee, to report. Beverly.
Good morning, Counselor. Council. We plan at the annual meeting to give you in advance a fulsome report of all of the activities of the ALA International Relations Office, headed by Michael Dowling, and the International Relations Committee. The association has an extraordinary program of international scope, and this report I have given you today just barely touches the surface. The International Relations Committee has six subcommittees, having divided the world into these geographical subcommittees. These committees are comprised not only of people in the United States, but our members around the world. And the technology has made those committees able to work in ways that we couldn't have dreamed of 5 years ago. The chairs of the committees are challenged by an international committee and have, I think, handled it beautifully. Four of the committees will be doing programs at the annual meeting. And as I indicate here, the International Relations Committee and the International Relations Roundtable will be doing a program generated really by my listening to Council and dealing with the resolutions that Council has brought to the committee over the last several years. The program will be Libraries in a Time of War, and it will emphasize the work of the U.S. Committee on the Blue Shield, and with its president speaking to you, and a presentation by a bibliographer at the University of Chicago who has studied libraries in a time of war going back to the Greeks. So fundamentally, I see this program as an extension and a continuation of the issues that the Council has found so important to it. I do want to commend Michael Dowling, who is our face internationally in ALA and has been fabulous to work with. The action item we have.
Beverly, I'm going to just interrupt you for a moment and give everyone a chance to comment on your report or to, you know, ask if there is any discussion so that we don't have a post-vote discussion. Okay, is there any discussion on the report? Are any questions? Seeing none, we'll continue with the motions.
We have a resolution, Council Document 18.1. It was printed before we had the Council caucus last night, and Aaron Dobbs and I caucused. And so there's been an additional resolve clause added, and the projectionist has that. I regret it's not in your blue document. Is that on the screen? It's on the screen, all right.
Yeah, it's there.
Thank you. It will be the last resolve, so I'll read the resolves as you have them on Council Document 18.1. The American Library Association expresses its deepest sympathy to the National Library and Archives and the library community in Haiti. And the American Library Association work in coordination with other U.S. associations, IFLA and its members, and the UNESCO on international response to this disaster. That ALA publicize and provide information to the international library community and the public on the importance of rebuilding damaged libraries and their collections. And resolve that ALA publicize and provide information on how and where the library community and the public can contribute to these rebuilding efforts. And resolve that the ALA urges the U.S. government and non-government organizations, that's the NGO, to provide funding for the reconstruction and rebuilding of libraries and other cultural institutions in Haiti. And resolve that ALA act as a conduit for the receipt of funds to assist in the rebuilding of libraries in Haiti. And then the final resolve that ALA urge libraries to provide up-to-date information about social and communication services available to the communities for the Haitian diaspora. Excuse me. And links to donation, other relief services.
Okay.
On behalf of the committee, I move that.
Okay. Is there any discussion on the resolution as you see it on the screen? Microphone number two.
Aaron Dobbs, Councilor at Large. Not to nitpick, because I'm really not that guy, but in resolution number five there, the other before non-government organizations should be going away. That's what we discussed last night at forum, since the U.S. government technically, I guess, is not a non-government organization, although I have my opinions there. And then number seven was the one that came off of the one, and we did agree on that. Thank you.
Beverly, that change will be made, correct?
Thank you. Yes,
okay with you.
No? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Microphone number three.
Marilyn McClaskey, IRRT counselor. I just want to report that IRRT endorses this resolution.
Okay, thank you. Next microphone. Microphone number two.
Good morning. Susan Piper, Councilor at Large. And we had been tossing around a resolution like this, and I love this resolution, and I stand in support of it. But I don't know if it's a point of personal privilege. I just want to share something that happened to me this morning regarding this in the taxi cab on the way over. My driver, Fontaine, was upset. I didn't know. I didn't pay much attention, but he said this was his first day back to work. And I said, oh, really? Have you been ill? And he said, no, I'm Haitian. And then he proceeded to tell me that his five brothers with all of their children and his two sisters with all of their children and all of his cousins, he has not heard from any of them. Mm-hmm. And he is just devastated. And so that kind of brought it on a personal level to me. And so I really stand in support of this. And I appreciate all the work the International Relations Committee has done on it. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Microphone number five.
Peg Ottinger, Counselor at Large. I support this motion completely, and I wonder if there is a that missing from the first resolve. There's a that in all the others.
We'll take that as an editorial correction.
And I have a question that it's really not directed to you, but to whomever. There was another Haitian motion that was floating around in space that I thought Aaron can probably answer my question as to what happened to that, because I fully support this one, but I thought the other one, which seems to have disappeared, was going in a slightly different direction, and this one is working toward the future, and the other one I thought was to deal with more immediate situation.
Shall I go ahead with microphone number?
So I think the other one is an Aaron Dobbs resolution. Perhaps he would like to speak to that.
Microphone number two, Aaron, would you respond to that?
Aaron Dobbs, Counselor at Large. The big push I had with mine was encouraging libraries in the U.S. to serve the Haitian diaspora, the word that I cannot say to save my life consistently. Because that's really where the need is in this country right now. As the American Library Association, I'd like to have us encourage our local libraries to take care of these folks. And that it's included in this one with the much better resolves than the ones that I thought I came up with.
Okay.
I'd rather merge this one than make it two separate.
Thank you. Microphone number seven.
M. Claire Knowles, ALA Executive Board, and ALA Counselor at Large. I rise in support of this resolution, and I'd like to state that the Black Caucus of the American Library Association has also begun collecting funds, and hopefully it will also be used in the same direction or in conjunction with the American Library Association. But since there is so much need in Haiti right now, I just commend everyone at this conference to support those who have gone through this horrible disaster. Thank you.
Okay. Microphone number two.
Susan Piper, Counselor at Large, again. I was a seconder to the motion that we were working on, Aaron and a couple of us. And one of the resolves that we had that is not in here was providing an opportunity to immediately free up any funding that may be earmarked for the disaster release that ALA has to go directly to Haiti and the restoration of libraries. Now, I don't know if that's just going to be a given or it needs to
this
be in there, Keith, or what. Does that make sense?
There are no disaster relief funds.
Oh.
ALA collects funds based on specific instances, as you know, directed by the membership, or as we developed for Katrina and for the tsunami a couple of years ago. So what we will do at this point is to actually get some communication out to people very quickly, because obviously it's on everyone's mind, and then make a site available for both ALA members and anyone else who wants to contribute. To be able to contribute to assistance provided to libraries and librarians.
Okay, because I would like to be able to put ALA at the top, one of the top of my list on my webpage when I do the donors. And also when we talk about, anybody talks about libraries in Haiti, the American Library Association should be the organization that is kind of heading it up as far as at least being behind getting support for libraries. So thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no one at the microphone, we'll proceed to a vote. All of those in favor of this motion, please raise one of your hands. All of those opposed, please raise one of your hands. All right, the motion passes, and mark your ballot. CD number 18.1 as amended. And thank you, Beverly. I now refer you to the ALA Council Document number 27 and ALA Council Document 27.1 and call upon Jan K. Sanders, Chair of the Committee on Organization, to present her report. Jan.
Thank you, President-elect Stevens. Good morning, Council. It's nice to be before you again. You have our report in document form, document 27. We do bring two action items to your attention and move the adoption of the revised ALA leadership development, that is intern guidelines, which is Council Document 27.1. You have it there before you. The changes that were made to that have to do with tightening up some consistency standards and making sure that language is similarly reflected in all of the ALA documents.
Okay. Is there any discussion on the motion? Microphone number 7.
Janet Swanhill, Counselor at Large, Chair of Policy Monitoring Committee. It was from the Policy Monitoring Committee that the request to clear up the confusion and inconsistency on the intern program came. And I would like to congratulate the committee on having answered every question that was raised.
Thank you.
Microphone number 3.
Nana Donahue, Counselor at Large. I hear a lot of talk around the association about eliminating and reducing barriers to involvement, but I'm really concerned about this revision putting up some new barriers to involvement. I personally got my start in the New Members Roundtable, and I served on several New Members Roundtable committees before I became an ALA committee intern. And if this were the policy at the time I applied to be an intern, I would not have been eligible. I think we're asking people to make some really difficult choices here as to whether they want to be involved with the New Members Roundtable or whether they want to be an ALA committee intern. I feel that if we're so committed to offering new ALA members as many opportunities as possible to be involved, that we're imposing a really artificial restriction here and keeping new members from getting a foot in the door effectively.
Microphone number 3.
Courtney Young, member of the executive board. I'd like to echo Councillor Donahue's comments that this will disqualify a lot of members who do not get the benefit of knowing that the internship program is available before they join another division or roundtable, such as New Members Roundtable. I think we definitely want to increase opportunities to participate in the association and not decrease them. And this policy change with the parenthetical, including its divisions, roundtables, et cetera, will create a significant barrier and will force members to unknowingly make choices or force them to make choices that will, I think, not provide. We will not get the full benefit of our membership if they're not able to be interns as well as participate in our divisions and roundtable committees. Thank you.
Microphone number 2.
Aaron Dobbs, Counselor at Large. I didn't go fast enough to check what the actual current policy is, but I think that something close to what this says is already in there, and it's observed in the breach most often. So I'm not sure that this is a practice change, although it is a textual policy change. Or excuse me, I'm not sure it's a... There, I've confused myself. It's not really changing what it says, except that it clarifies things. So it will change practice, but not really change the policy that we've sort of not been paying attention to.
Microphone number 3.
Jenny Emanuel, New Members Roundtable Counselor. I have two comments. One is to follow up on Councillor Donahue and Councillor Young's comments about a barrier to participation. That, and I have found that a lot of newer members don't understand the difference between a roundtable committee, a division committee, and an ALA level committee. It took me 5 years to figure this out, and it was only after I was appointed as an intern to a committee till I started to get the clarity of what was different at each level. So I think having the wording that you have to be, you cannot be on a division or roundtable committee first is very confusing and will just add and complicate the whole process. And the other one comment I have is a question, and that is, why or is the wording that an intern will be appointed for 1 year instead of the current two? Right now, interns are appointed for 2 years, which is great. I know from my experience, I didn't understand what was going on until the second year. So I'm kind of curious why that change is being made.
Microphone number two.
Gina Persicini, Idaho chapter counselor. I was actually not very familiar with the intern program, and I serve on a committee that has an intern, and I found myself baffled just the other day. I kept thinking, why doesn't he talk? Because he's smart, and he's intelligent, and he's a professional, and why is he just taking minutes and not talking? And I realized, he is an intern. And I really welcome the opportunity to bring newer members and get them involved and expose them to different areas of the association. But I feel a little like he's the second-class citizen on our committee, and it's a little creepy.
Jan, do you want to respond to the previous question about the one? Do you want to respond to the question?
The question about the one-year term? Mm-hmm. In the original documents, or in some of the other documents that we looked at, there was a choice of a one-year term or a two-year term, and the recommendation as it came to us from the Training Orientation and Leadership Development Committee was to make that consistently 1 year.
Okay. All right, thank you. Is it seven? Microphone number seven.
Larry Romans. I also agree, and I think we should pay attention to our younger members, who are really concerned about this change, but I think just talking about it doesn't do any good. Can we move to change this document and change it from including to excluding?
The charge You're certainly to, free to amend the motion.
The charge to the Committee on Organization was to simply take a look at the recommendation of the parent, the owner of this particular issue, and to make sure that it was consistent with existing ALA policy, and that's what we have brought you.
I would like to move that the parenthetical phrase, including its divisions, roundtables, et cetera, be changed to excluding its divisions, roundtables, et cetera. I have a second, and I will give it to the...
You're taking it over, too. Okay. Do we proceed strictly to the discussion of his amendment at this point? Okay, until the amendment's on the screen, we will continue with the discussion on the main motion. Microphone number four.
Joseph Egan, member of the Executive Board. I want to echo some of the concerns that have been raised here. I started out in one of the roundtables, and I was a member of a committee there, but I had very little experience in any ALA-wide committee. I think that we need to open up more opportunities for our new members and our younger members as interns on ALA committees. In addition, one of my other concerns is being a former committee chair, the role of the intern on the committee is really very poorly defined. Whether they have a vote or not, whether they have a voice or not, what their role is on that committee is often not clear to the chair of the committee or the members of the committee. I'd like that issue to be resolved, you know, in the context of this. And you know, I'm wondering, given what Jan is telling us, whether it wouldn't be better to refer this back and to work further on this, because I think we have a number of issues, and I'm not sure that even Larry's amendment will address all of them.
Okay, I'm going to ask, are you making a motion to refer it back to the committee?
Well, I'd actually like to have us have a little bit more discussion about this, because I'm not sure exactly about the process.
Okay.
I mean, even as a member of the executive board, I'm a little bit confused about, you know, Ku's role in this and everything. And if Jan could talk about that further, I think it would be helpful.
Jan?
We had an extensive discussion at the Ku meeting, and there were a majority of the committee members there on that occasion. And we heard extensively from Terry Switzer and her group, who were bringing this forward to us, and we asked them a number of questions and asked them what they wanted us to do, and essentially what they asked us to do was to simply make sure, again, that the language and the consistency with other ALA documents was there. So our role was not to substantively change what they brought to us, but to accept it as reflective of other ALA policies. I can tell you that in regard to the comments that have been made about the role of the intern within the committee structure, it was the conversation with that group that the use, for lack of a better word, the use of the intern and the role of the intern needed to be left to the direction of the particular committee or group that they were serving.
Okay, microphone number 7.
Barbara Miller, counselor at large, and with respect to Jan, because I understand what your group was doing, I really want to speak to this idea of an intern not being previously a member of a committee, because I think I know personally, without mentioning names, of committees that have had interns who have chaired other parts of this organization, and I think it's very important if you are, you can get shoe-heeled into a particular part of ALA, and through council and other venues, you may discover that there are other parts of ALA that you want to participate in, and the best way to do this would be to get appointed as an intern to a committee to understand how other parts of the organization operate. So I think it's very important to allow interns who have previously served on other parts of ALA committees to be allowed to intern.
Okay, microphone number 8.
Michael Goldrick, counselor at large. I would observe that according to the electronic version of the ALA policy manual that I have, it says in section 6.6.3, Leadership Development Program for ALA Committees, the Leadership Development Program provides an avenue for interested members who have never held an ALA committee appointment to become involved in ALA committee work by serving as an intern. Interns are appointed for a period of 2 years by the ALA president-elect. All ALA committees have interns. So in a way, it sort of seems to me that the language in some of the document that Ku has brought to us is not consistent with our current policy. I'm a little bit familiar with this because the intern program used to be, as the document notes, under the purview of the membership committee, on which I have served several times, including once as chair. I will give full credit to told the new committee that is handling the program that they are trying to make it be more active, more vital, and clearer to the committee chairs the opportunity that they have with the interns that are appointed to serve on their committees by the president-elect. And I know that Roberta is well aware of the appointment process for that. So I just wanted to make the observation that the current policy is a 2-year appointment, and it doesn't say anything about divisions, roundtables, et cetera. Thank
okay.
you.
Okay, Jan, would you like to respond?
Yes, with respect to Councilman Goldrick, the second part of the action items that we have brought to you this morning reflects a change to that particular policy to which Michael was referring and is intended to bring consistency to all the documents.
Okay. Microphone number 7.
Sarah Pritchard, Library Research Roundtable Counselor. I feel in some ways we're killing the messenger. I don't remember whether this policy was the leadership development intern guidelines were brought to council by the Training Organization and Leadership Development Committee. That is the committee that has changed the guidelines. Ku is trying to sort of in the bureaucratic way incorporate them. I'd like to hear from the TOLD committee. Did they bring these guidelines to council? Because there was an existing policy, and therefore, in my view, it should have come to council. And almost all the discussion we've had here this morning should have been directed at that committee. Personally, I disagree with the change that the committee, the TOLD committee, is recommending. I'm going to vote against this, but I don't think it's Ku's issue. I think it's the other committee, and I'd like to know if we could invite a representative from that committee to explain.
Okay. Microphone number 7.
I'm sorry, I'm standing here to speak to the amendment whenever it shows up because I've already spoken on the main motion.
Okay. In that case, we're going to microphone number two, who has also spoken on it previously.
Aaron Dobbs, Councillor Large, correct. I was here to speak to the amendment.
Okay. Okay. Microphone, it's up. Okay, our amendment is now up, and so the discussion will be on the amendment. So if it's okay, I'm going to go back to microphone number two.
That's me. Oh, okay. I'd like to say that explicitly excluding participation in the division roundtables, et cetera, is probably a really good thing. And I'm going to vote for this amendment to do it, and then when we get back to the main motion, I'm going to suggest that we refer it back to Told.
I'm sorry. Microphone number seven.
Janet Swanhill, Councillor at Large, and I'm going to vote against the amendment. In fact, the intern program has often been used to enable people who have held very substantive, extremely important committee assignments in divisions and roundtables, as well as elected offices in divisions and roundtables, to be appointed as interns to ALA-level committees. I submit that people of that sort do not need to have the experience that an internship will give them, because the internship program was originally designed to let people who don't have experience with the kind of group process that is involved in being on committees and boards to get a little bit of it. I would have been happy with an exclusion of NMRT, since NMRT exists as in order to provide introductions. But I'm not happy with the exclusion of all divisions and roundtables.
Microphone number eight.
Michael Goldrick, Councillor at Large. And it was pointed out to me that CU does have a second item that they're bringing to us. I think in a way they may have chosen an order that may not have been best. However, I would also echo my friend and fellow Councillor Janet Swan-Hill's comments that I'm not really comfortable with either of these or even the amendment, and would suggest kindly to the chair of CU that perhaps she recommend that the chair of Told bring these back to us at annual if both of these motions fail.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, microphone number five.
Peg Ottinger, Councillor at Large and also member of CU. And I would like to question the amendment, which says, if I am reading it correctly, that they're not supposed to have held elected office within the association or office with any of the units of the American Library Association, and then excluding divisions, roundtables, and whatever. What other units are there besides those?
Yeah, Okay, microphone number three.
Hey, Rungi, Councillor at Large. Michael, I would like to move what you just said. Will you take that as a motion? You suggested it. I would like to move it.
We have to see it.
Wait, what are you moving?
You can't just say what he said. We have to see it.
Right. He's moving to refer. That will supersede the amendment, won't it? Melanie? Yeah, over the amendment, right. Right, okay. Michael, if you don't get over there, I'm going to microphone number five. Are you ready? You're not ready? Okay, microphone number five.
Peg Ottinger still. I would also just like to point out to a couple of people that have made comments about the interns and what they do. If you look on the back of the sheet, it says all interns are expected to participate fully in the work. That would answer the question of whoever it was that mentioned an intern who sat and just took notes and never said anything, because that's not participating fully, in my opinion. And also, it clarifies voting, which I think is an extremely important point of this whole revision, because as I understand it, there has been quite a difference in the way interns have been allowed to participate and also some places where they're allowed to vote and some places where they are not allowed to vote. So those two things were dealt with, and they are urged to participate.
Okay, while this motion moves forward, microphone number 7.
Thank you, Sarah Pritchard, Library Research Roundtable. I'd like to repeat my question. Is anyone from the TOLD committee in the room? I don't see how they can view a continuous consistency. For example, previous service on a roundtable committee is enormously different from previous service on a division committee. And the basic recommendation to CU, I still feel, is the problem, and we have not heard anybody from that committee explain their thinking.
Okay. Microphone number 4.
Pat Wan, Counselor at Large. I think we're raising enough questions about this current document to refer it back, but let me reiterate one earlier issue that has already come up and I think is extremely important, and that is the issue of limiting the term of the intern to 1 year. Our policy currently is 2 years, and I agree from working on committees that the productivity and understanding of the intern, him or herself, is greatly enhanced by having a 2-year commitment to a committee.
Okay, do we have the motion on the screen yet? If it's all right with you, I'd like to read the, it's on the screen, just showed up on the screen. Okay. So now we have a motion to refer CD number 27.1, item 1, and items 1 and 2 back to the Training Orientation and Leadership Development Committee, which is told, and ask the chair to report back to council at annual. Do we have discussion on that motion?
Point of clarification, the chair, does that that refers to the chair of TOLD as opposed to the chair of CU?
Just okay. Getting my microphone number orders. Is it 2 or 8? 8. Okay. Okay. You're going to speak to your motion?
I am Michael mm-hmm. Goldrick, Counselor at Large, and yes, that is to ask the chair of TOLD to report back to council at annual, because I believe at this point I feel for Jan that she has been put in a hot seat on a topic not of her committee's making in terms of the content. And so I think that that's why I would like to have the committee that is specifically responsible for asking for the changes to come to us. It will still eventually have to go to CU again, but I want them, I think that we should have the opportunity to hear them explain the rationale for the reduction in the length of terms, and some of the other very important questions that my fellow counselors have raised today that the chair of CU is unable to answer because that's not her job in this case. Thank you.
No apology necessary. I've been in hotter seats.
Okay. Thank you. And you are addressing the motion that's currently on the screen. Microphone number 2.
Aaron Dobbs, Counselor at Large. I'd like to request, should this pass, that the chair of TOLD receives a summary of everything that's been discussed on this topic from you're probably obviously going to do this already, but I just wanted to be clear that really we ought to actively hand it to them and say, here's council's problems with this, fix it, please. Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone number 7.
Janet Swan Hill, Counselor at Large, and I am speaking to the move to refer and am in favor of it. Because a number of questions have been raised here, and I would urge the chair of TOLD not only to consider those issues that have been raised on the floor of council or that may still be raised in the as we go further through this the CU report, but any others that they might think could possibly be pitfalls. For instance, there is the issue of whether interns vote or not, and to explain the rationale for that. There's an extremely good rationale for the non-voting decision that went forward, but I have a feeling that it's something that could come up for discussion, so they might as well cover the whole ground.
Okay. Microphone number 7.
Nancy Zimmerman, Counselor at Large, Chair Cope. As a committee chair, I agree with this motion to refer it back to TOLD, but I would also like to add a suggestion that use of interns be included in the committee chair orientation, because we haven't heard about interns in the committee chair orientation. So, thank you.
Thank you. Microphone number 7.
Ling Huijian, Councilor at Large. To follow up with Janet's suggestion, I think another issue that needs to be considered if this motion is passed is that is the value of interim. From an educator's perspective, an interim or practicum is appropriate when the person does not have other opportunity to participate. And my understanding is that any new member could be appointed as a regular member of any committee at this point, well, mostly, most committees at this point. And so what is the distinction between an interim, what is the value of the interim really needs to be considered as well. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Is there any further discussion on the motion? If there's no further discussion, we will move to a vote. All of those who approve of the motion to refer to CD number 27.1, items 1 and 2, back to the Training, Orientation, and Leadership Development Committee, told and asked the chair of told to report back to council at annual, please raise one of your hands. All of those opposed, please raise one of your hands. The motion passes. Please mark your ballot, CD number 27.1, items 1 and 2, 2 told.
Those were the only action items that we had.
Okay. Is there any further discussion on Jan's report? Any questions on the report? Okay, Jan.
Thank you.
We thank you very much. Okay, let us now, we have a question. Microphone number 4.
Sue Kam, Councilor at Large. May we have a break, please?
You know, I was just going to recommend that. I looked down and I saw we had another big discussion coming up and I thought we were due for a break, me included. So let's take a, is it okay to do a 10-minute break? Or is that okay with you? Good. So we'll report back here at what time, 9:40? Is that okay? 9:40? See you at 9:40. Okay, please take your seats.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. We will resume the council session. The next report will be of a special committee group. It's on the Google Book Settlement Task Force. Jim Reddick is chair, and he will be making the report.
Thank you, Roberta. Council will recall that at the annual conference in Chicago last July, it passed a resolution to establish a special task force related to the Google Book Settlement. The task force was formed in November, and there are various key events that will help shape the group's work. It held its first face-to-face meeting here Saturday evening. The revised settlement between the parties, Google on one side and on the other side, the American Association of Publishers and the Authors Guild, they submitted that to the judge at the 11th hour on the deadline of Friday, November 13th. I don't know if that portends anything that it was a Friday the 13th. The judge is considering that, has scheduled a hearing in mid-February. The Department of Justice had concerns about possible monopoly antitrust issues in the original settlement, and the judge has given them until February 4th if they want to file anything additional. The court made it very clear it did not want filings that repeated information that had been submitted to it previously. ALA wrote a letter to the court identifying issues that were within the scope on which we could comment about this revised settlement. We do not know when there will be a ruling after this hearing in mid-February. We will, though, respond to whatever comes out of that and its implications for libraries and for our members who are authors whose works may be included in the Google collection. We'll do the usual things, press release, depending upon the gravity of the issues. We may also try to get an op-ed placed in major national publications from our president. Meanwhile, we're going to be working away. We're not going to just sit and wait for the court to act. ALA staff are going to review the existing documents about this settlement to create a list of key issues. The task force will organize and then prioritize these. Some of the issues we are fairly confident will be Google specific. In other words, Google could act unilaterally on those issues. Things that may fall into that category are public domain works, including government publications. There will also probably be some issues that are specific to the American Association of Publishers and some specific to the Authors Guild. We'll also identify those issues upon which we believe we have common ground with one or more of these parties to the lawsuit. And things such as privacy. We have a tradition of working with the American Association of Publishers on privacy. You may remember when Monica Lewinsky's credit card records were looked into to see what books she had bought at Kramer Books in Washington, D.C. We were allies on that one. And access to information, of course, is a common ground, as long as one doesn't discuss copyright law too much and its effect on access to information. There we sometimes part. We're also going to be identifying desired outcomes, which is going to be somewhat difficult to do in specific ways until we see what the court has to say. We will also, for these things that can be dealt with outside of whatever the court has to say, we will begin working with those organizations. The task force voted to authorize its chair to meet with the head of the Books Rights Registry, and that is an organization created by the settlement to handle payments for use of the Google collection. And with the AAP, we have an existing joint committee with the AAP. There hasn't been opportunity yet to discuss how we might want to work through that mechanism, and with the Authors Guild, once we identify those issues and prioritize them. The task force has an educational and an informational role for our members. It was council that created this group, so we'll keep you informed. We have a subset of members who have special information needs, presumably, and those are members who are also authors, especially those members who are authors and who hold copyright to works that are included in the Google collection. They have certain rights about what they can exercise about how their work is used by Google. We will also plan, once we know more from the court, a program on this matter at the annual conference. Holding the conference in Washington should give us the opportunity to bring in some people with expertise in this area whom we might otherwise not be able to attract to a conference. Those are the things we have done to date in a conference call and a 90-minute meeting and some correspondence among ourselves on ALA Connect.
Are there any questions for Jim? Microphone number 7.
Sarah Pritchard, Library Research Roundtable. Thank you, Jim. As many of us know, it's really a critical issue. It's even more complicated for ALA. Not only do we have members who are authors, we have members who are publishers. Literally small press owners who are mm-hmm. members of ALA. And many of us members are embodied within our institutions, authors, publishers, libraries as users, and libraries as Google Book partners. So I urge us to keep in mind this complexity of our relationship to this settlement, which legally we aren't actually parties to, and yet we're totally affected in multiple roles.
We are also involved in that ALA itself is a publisher.
Microphone number four.
Elizabeth Riddler, Counselor at Large. There are a lot of access issues too, and I've been told, I was at a explanatory meeting with the Archivist Roundtable of New York last week, and a lawyer was talking on the Google settlement. And one of the interesting observations was that the Google process, what they're putting up, seems to be fairly accessible for people with disabilities. So that was very interesting to me. But the access issue also is very important. Like in public libraries, are we going to just have one terminal, say, in my main branch of Brooklyn Public Library with 60 branches? So, I mean, everywhere you turn, there's thorny issues. I really appreciate the report for dummies that was done. Basically, I think there was the third report on the Google settlement. And please, whoever is doing that, please continue to do that as we get updated, because it's written in a clear language that I think people can understand, and not only the ALA community, but I think other people have had access to those reports.
Thank you. Just a clarification, they're called guides for the perplexed, not guides for dummies. I don't know how you could ever dumb down U.S. copyright law enough for dummies to comprehend it. Jonathan Band, a lawyer, an IP lawyer in Washington, who has written those, I, Office